This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers and for readers who enjoy a good book. I don't even know where to start with my guest today. She is the writer's writer. Carolyn Hart has won so many awards that I'd spend half my program, I think, talking about it. So I just want to jump right in and say, hi, Carolyn.
Hello, Patsy.
Oh, wow.
Hello to sunny Florida.
Oh, it's such a thrill. I was so excited that you were going to be on the program today that I could barely sleep because I, you know, as I said, there is probably no writer more generous, more giving than you. You are so famous among sort of the writing community because of your wonderful series, which we're going to talk about in a minute. I'm going to keep you on for the whole program, so we'll start with your most famous series, I think, and then we'll go on from there. But I just wanted to mention to everyone, of course, that you are the mystery writer of America's Grandmaster. That was in 2014, but you will always be the grandmaster to me. I was so happy recently. I was talking to people, and I talked to Sue Grafton, and of course, she's also a grandmaster, and I know that you've credited her with some of the your ability to sort of break into the mystery writing field.
Oh, definitely. Sue Grafton was one of the women who made a huge difference for women mystery writers. There were three of them, Sue Grafton, Marcia Muller, and Sarah Paretsky. And until they published, their books were published, and this would have been in the early 80s, really mysteries were pretty much the province of male hard-boiled writers. But what made the difference was that they wrote their books, and they were hard-boiled, but their protagonists were women. And New York publishers thought, well, yeah, this is the American mystery, and we'll give this a try. Oh, well, readers just loved it. And that made the huge difference for all the other women writers.
And, of course, that led to your, well, certainly I think your first commercial successful adult mystery series, which features a character that is just so beloved by your readers, Annie Lawrence. It's the first book, of course, was called Death on Demand, and that's the name of Annie's bookstore. So tell us first, I mean, of course, it was so clever to come out with an idea to base a mystery series in a bookstore. So tell us how you came out with Annie Lawrence and all of...
Okay. Well, what happened is that I was at a period in my career. I had had, 11 or 12 books published, and they all disappeared into the black hole of publishing, and nobody paid any attention to them. And I was very discouraged, but I was teaching down at the University of Oklahoma, and I did that for about 3 years, taught writing. And you were expected to go to professional meetings. Well, what does a mystery writer do? Well, I thought, well, I belong to the Mystery Writers of America, and they have a chapter in Houston, and they were having a spring meeting, and I went down there, and when I was at a wonderful party, a guy came up to me, and we were talking, and his name is Bill Kreider, and he's now a very well-known Texas mystery author, and he said his first book was just being published, and I still was about a year or so away from Annie and Max coming out, and he said, well, have you been to Murder by the Book? And I said, what's that? And he said, well, that's our mystery bookstore here in Houston. Well, I took a cab from the hotel. I went to Murder by the Book. It was then owned by Martha Farrington, and I absolutely fell in love with it. And when I came home, I had just started a new mystery, and I had set it in a bookstore, but it was going to be in Carmel, California. And it was just going to be a bookstore. And I thought, you know, I'm going to make it a mystery bookstore. And another book had just come out that had used Carmel as a background of mystery. And I thought, oh, no, I better put it somewhere else. And I thought about Hilton Head, where we've vacationed for years. So I created a little fictional sea island. And I put Death on Demand in it. And it was the beginning of a wonderful, wonderful chapter in my writing life.
Well, it was a brilliant idea because it led to so many wonderful, wonderful events and the ability to really share with readers so many other writers, which is such a generous thing that you've done. Now, let's talk a little bit about Annie. Of course, Annie's a proprietor.
Okay.
And of the delightful thing, of course, is that she's being pursued by a very handsome man. And let's talk a little bit about Max.
Okay. Max, I decided that, you know, well, Annie is actually patterned after the personality of my daughter, Sarah. And Annie is always in my mind young and energetic and kind and fun and very serious, though, always works really hard. And I thought, well, you know, who's the guy that's going to be interesting to her and interested in her? And you know, I'm writing fiction, so I made Max very rich.
That's nice.
Never have to work.
Isn't that wonderful when you can do that?
Exactly. And then I thought, well, he'll be tall, blonde, and handsome, and Joe Hardy all grown up. And I just had a wonderful time with it. And I named Max after Agatha Christie's second husband, Max Mallowan.
Well, it's... The combination of Annie and Max is, of course, fantastic by itself. But the other characters that surround Annie, well, first we have to talk about Agatha, because Agatha is probably, you know, the most famous cat other than the Algonquin cat, Algonquin uh-huh. Hotel cat, which it's such a delightful thing to go to the Algonquin Hotel and find the cat there. Of course, in your case, we have Agatha, who has a personality.
Oh, she does indeed. And, of course, all cats do. And, obviously, I am a cat person. And at that time, I had this marvelous black cat, Sophie. And so I named her Agatha in honor of Agatha Christie. But Sophie and my fictional Agatha are very imperious cats. I mean, whatever they deem should happen will happen. I mean, it's amazing how a cat, when you think of their relatively small size, how they can maneuver these great big creatures and make them do precisely what the cat wants. No, I love cats.
Exactly. And, of course, she rules the bookstore, which, you know, Death on Demand is, you write about it so beautifully that I think every one of your readers can just walk in and they know where the books are, and of course one of the most important things, they know where the coffee is, and
exactly
that always, of course, is as a big coffee drinker, I love when you write about coffee.
Oh, coffee is, as we say, the elixir of life, you know.
Oh, it is. I'm so happy when they came out recently. They said, coffee's good for you. I said, yes. I've known
exactly.
that for years. I've known that for years.
So coffee's good for you, and chocolate is good for you, and cats are good for you.
That's it.
The three C's.
You've got it. And, of course, you know, not since Dorothy L. Sayers has anyone written a mother-in-law like you have. I mean, you have in Death on Demand, you know, Dorothy L. Sayers, of course, Harriet Vane, who married Peter uh-huh. Whimsey. Of course, his
right.
mother is fantastic. I love her.
Right.
But, oh, your Max's mother, Laurel, is something uh-huh. special. I just, you know, the minute you start thinking about her, you have to smile. It's just, how did you come out with her so perfectly?
Well, actually, she was an afterthought in let me see, Honeymoon with Murder. I had written the book and turned it in, and I had focused mainly on the mystery in it. And my then editor, a wonderful editor at that point, was Kate Misiak, who is one of the great mystery editors of all time. And Kate came back and said, oh, I really love the book, but why don't you put in more about the wedding, because this is the book in which Annie and Max get married. And I hadn't given that much thought, and so I started thinking about it. And I thought, well, what if Max's mother wanted to help plan?
just walked it onto
the screen.
Whenever she appears in the book, it's like, oh, we're in for a real treat. It's hard to describe. People just have to read the book, and when they get to the Laurel parts, it's like that special treat. You know, you've eaten the chocolate, and then you've got the whipped cream, and then you have the cherry on top. It's too wonderful.
Well, thank you, Patsy. Well, I will have to admit, I do have a lot of fun with writing. I mean, some of the Death on Demand books are darker than others. You know, some of them are more serious. Some of them are very lighthearted. But I never know until I start writing which kind of book it's going to be. And I love the subsidiary characters because they... they're just very interesting to me. And I have Emma Clyde, who is the island mystery author. And Emma, you know, is a quintessential author. She sees everything in terms of herself. And I'm afraid that is a quality of most authors. They immediately personalize everything. And Emma's very gruff, and, you know, I've had lots of fun with her. And then Henny Brawley, who is the best reader on the island. She really knows her mysteries. But she was my tribute to women who were young during World War II. And, of course, when I started this series, I had no idea. I wrote the first one in 1985, came out in 87, and last year in 2015 was the 25th book in the series. And I had a reader ask me, well, wouldn't Henny be in her 90s now? and I replied, well, I didn't know when I started that the series would run this long, so I just hope readers will cut me a little slack.
Well, and who cares if she's 90? Because I tell you, we have a woman who lives in our building, and she's 98, and and amazing. I mean, she's a little go-getter. You know, she knows, she's up on everything. She doesn't miss a beat, and it's fantastic. And so, you know, Henny can be 105 and keep going.
Well, I like that idea because she was a remarkable young woman. She was one of the WASP, you know, the women in the air service.
Yes, I know. As a matter of fact,
met a bunch of them in Florida because there would be a lot of retired people who have
Well,
had
I have, and as a matter of fact, I wrote a movie for Debbie Reynolds.
Did you?
Yes, in which she was a WASP, and of course now she's she owns a rundown airfield in Florida, and unfortunately, I mean, it's called the Sunshine Pilot, and I wrote it for Debbie Reynolds. And unfortunately, what happened is, you know, when we had the big mess here, we were just about ready to go into production, and we had that big financial mess here in Florida where everything collapsed, So everything collapsed, and we weren't able to shoot it. But I wrote it, so of course I'm very familiar with WASPs and the fantastic work that they did.
And what amazing women they were! It's just so exciting, and so few people know about them.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. That's why I really, I'm still hoping to get this movie off the ground because I think it would be fantastic. And Debbie Reynolds is going pretty strong, and so is, you know, so many of these actresses who are like Sophia Loren. I saw the other day, and I thought, wow, you know, I have to write a movie for her. You know, so it's fantastic, and of course, all of your characters are so amazing. I, well, I, you know, when you have now done 25 Death on Demand, it's sort of hard to imagine that, you know, how it came from one little idea, of course, you know, by going to Murder by the Book, which, you know, I lived in, my boys were both born in Houston. We lived there for about 10 years.
Oh, yes.
And so, you know, I know the feeling and you know, having a wonderful bookstore and then being inspired. And of course, has anyone ever asked you if they can open a Death on Demand bookstore?
Oh, I've always said carte blanche. You know, you're quite welcome to. I've heard from readers over the years that their dream would be to do that. Of course, I still think that wonderful specialty bookstores can thrive. I mean, there's a wonderful bookstore in Delray, Florida. You know, the mystery bookstore. But it's very challenging to open a bookstore now.
Oh, it is.
Everything is in such a
Well, we have here in St. Petersburg a fantastic bookstore called Haslam's, and they have a great, great, you know, collection of not just new books, but of old books. And so you can really dig through their mystery section and find some fantastic books, which I love to do. And now, you know, of course, in Death on Demand, of course, Annie is always looking for, you know, collectibles. Do you have all these books that you write about?
I have a great many of them. Yes.
Whoa.
You know, I love old mysteries. You know, and of course, I'm friends with Reese Bowen. You know, who's just such a fabulous writer. And she and I have roomed together sometimes when we've gone on mystery conventions. And we both one time were so amused because as our travel book, each of us had one of our early an early Agatha Christie. You know, you never tire of the real classics. You
Oh, never. You know, one of the writers said people don't read, you know, very much anymore. Helen McGinnis.
Mm-hmm.
I love Helen McGinnis.
She was
books.
Wonderful.
When you pick up one of her books, you just get right into the whole story. She has such a ability to take a reader into the environment, and I think they're just brilliant books.
They are, and one interesting fact about Helen McGinnis is that when she describes some physical, say it's a store or a shop or a home or a street, that is exactly the way it looked because she was there and she had taken notes.
I know. You know what happens to me is because I've read her books. She's like one of the authors I've always turned to. You know, especially when I was living in Europe and living overseas, and I would drag her books along with me. This is years ago, but. I would know these places so well because of her books.
Exactly, and it's because they were absolutely. I just thought that was very fascinating that she looked at something specific when she described a scene, because that is one thing all authors do try to do when you are creating a scene. You will put in all kinds of background details because that gives the reader a sense of reality when they're reading it. And sometimes when I'm, you know, describing the ocean or something like that, well, yes, that's what it looks like off the South Carolina coast. But otherwise, I'm pretty much, I just pull facts from here and there and come up with strange things. And sometimes I wonder, where did that come from?
Well, I always, in your books, I always admire your knowledge of trees. Every time what is this one? She knows every tree, every plant. You know, I try, you know, to learn all of this stuff. But, oh, wow, you are like, you can just write about trees. You could write a whole book just about trees.
There's something, you know, I'm a native of Oklahoma, and so, of course, we don't abound in trees.
Exactly.
So when I am in South Carolina, I'm just so in awe of all the trees. I mean, to me, they're just magnificent creatures, you know, and I guess that's one reason it's always It seems to me rather a distinguishing fact about that part of the coast or those magnificent pine trees.
Well, you know, Carolyn, I just we're talking, and I already missed my cue to take a little break. I have to take a little break. I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more.
Okay.
I hate to take a break, but we're doing it. Hold
Thank
on.
You.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida. With 30,000 square feet and over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. On January 30th, when best-selling author Tim Dorsey will be signing autographs of his latest adventure, Coconut Cowboy. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, and they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
Hi, this is Tim Del Toro.
And I'm Lou Angelwolf, and we are the Grease Gurus.
Our show is broadcast every Saturday morning live at WTAN, TAN Talk Radio, 1340.
That's 10 o'clock every Saturday morning for an automotive forum that is flavored with humor and insight.
We encourage you to call in and be part of the Grease Gurus show.
We'd love to have you, and we will certainly help you find your inner grease.
This show is sponsored by Tim's Performance Service Center in beautiful Tarpon Springs at 906 Verona Place, and you can reach us personally at 727-543-1601.
Aha.
5,000 years of Chinese music and dance in one night, declared the New York Times. Shenyun Performing Arts will take you on an extraordinary journey from ancient dynasties to the modern day. Experience the wonder of authentic Chinese culture. Experience Shenyun. Coming to the Mahaffey Theater, January 12th and 13th. Tickets at shenyun.com or call 888-974-3698.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Mystery Writer of America's Grandmaster, Carolyn Hart. Hi, Carolyn.
Hello, Patsy.
Okay, well, we've been talking about, of course, your best-selling series called Death on Demand and about Annie Lawrence Darling. I forgot to mention that her husband, her love, was Max Darling, and she married, so what a perfect name, Annie Lawrence Darling. And, you know, every time I watch the Blackhawks play, you know, their goalie's name is Darling, and I think, what a darling name.
Well, and you know, actually, I should confess that Darling, I named him after Ron Darling, the fabulous Mets pitcher at the time.
Oh, that's yeah, exactly. Because I also love baseball.
I do too.
What a perfect name! And I'm going to play a little song for you, and I think you'll like it. And then we'll get back. Hold on.
Okay.
Such a delicate thing. A lover's kiss is like the flutter of a butterfly wing. A lover's heart must have another heart to which it can cling. Take my heart, I gladly give.
Well, of course, that is Dinah Shore singing Delicado.
I love that song.
Isn't it beautiful?
I really do.
I can imagine Annie and Max dancing to that at the country club.
Oh, I can too. I can see it.
You know, I feel so sorry for this generation of people who don't know.
Because they don't have this wonderful music we enjoyed.
There is nothing. I mean, you know, people don't listen to Dinah Shore anymore, but you listen to that song and it just fills you with joy and this whole emotion. I just wished, you know, they would play more of this, because it is sad that they don't, the younger generation doesn't understand what this kind of beautiful music can do to you.
They've never heard it.
They've never heard
it.
And of course, that brings us, this song brings us to one of your books where you mention it right at the beginning. And, you know, this is your Bailey Ruth. Your Bailey Ruth character. And this is, we'll talk about how this series and how you developed this series, which is basically about a ghost.
Exactly.
And tell us about, you know, when you created this series. Of course, this is written differently. It's written in first person from sort of Bailey Ruth's talking about what she's doing on Earth. So tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I will have to confess, I love writing about Bailey Ruth. She's really, in a sense, inspired by a blithe spirit. I always thought that Noel Coward's play was the funniest thing I ever saw in my entire life. And I loved the Topper books when I was growing up. And I always wanted to write a book about a ghost, and not, you know, a dark, dour, unpleasant, creepy kind of ghost. I thought, yeah, it doesn't have to be that way. It can be just fun. I wanted to have fun with it. And I originally had an idea for a young woman is up in the attic, and she's going to get married, and she's very prim and proper and rather restrained. And she opens up this trunk and finds a baptismal gown, and a set of them. And one of them was for the sister that she never knew, who did not survive. And that brings that sister there. And this sister's a very rowdy, fun-loving, outgoing type person, and I was going to have her transform this young woman's life. Well, it's wonderful, the ideas you have and what happens to them, because then I thought, okay, I'm going to write this book about a ghost, and I thought, where are ghosts? And I thought, well, they're in heaven. So I started thinking about heaven, and I swear to you that all of a sudden this vivacious redhead came swinging around a cloud, and there was Bailey Ruth, and I was off on an entirely different kind of book. So writers are a little bit crazy, you know.
You have
to be honest about it, you know. So I do love Bailey Ruth. I think, frankly, she would make the funniest movie, and there's a, you know, the Hollywood agent who's tried to place her. But I suppose the problem is that the books I write are just too genteel for today's market.
Well, I don't know. I think there's, we have a nice, recently the Hallmark channel has been doing really some very nice and clever mystery mm-hmm. stories. And I think you would fit right in there. And particularly, you know, because there is, I think, this need for some warm-hearted and good-spirited stories. And now, one of the book that, of course, this you mentioned, the Dinah Shore song is, of course, Ghost to the Rescue, which is interesting from many points of view because, of course, in this, Bailey Ruth is helping an author. Now, you are, of course, famous for being, you know, in all of the Death on Demand books, you mention authors, and I'm sure that many people have found and discovered authors simply from reading you. Once they read yours,
I hope so. Yes.
Well, they do, and I forgot to mention that in the Death on Demand, of course, you have this little plot twist where you have every month Annie has a contest where she. Has drawings of five different drawings, and mm-hmm. it's a contest where her readers, the people in who come to the store, can guess who are the authors, and of course win free coffee, which appeals to me. I need a month of free coffee.
Exactly.
You know, at the prices they're charging nowadays, I need a bookstore like that. And I'd study up just so I'd win them. But, you know, so in all of your books, you mention people. And I know that all of these authors, they come, well, the ones who are living, maybe even the ones who are dead, they come back to you and thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure because I love the mystery. I mean, I love the genre. And I truly believe mysteries are very important to our culture and to life because mysteries reaffirm our faith in goodness. And here's what I've always thought is that people who read mysteries want the world to be a good place. And that is where they can find where the world, where justice is served and where people are, there are people who care about right and wrong. And I just see the mystery itself as standing kind of as a beacon of goodness in the world. And I've read mysteries all my life. I've known mystery authors. I just love it. And it's a pleasure to share information about wonderful mysteries. I really enjoy doing that.
Well, I know I discovered a writer. I had not read him until I read, you know, you mentioned him in one of your books, and that's Mike Resnick.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And, you know, so I discovered him through reading your book, and I know many, many of your readers have done the exact same thing. They've discovered, you know, writers because of you, and I know that one of the writers you mentioned in one of your books is, of course, Elizabeth George.
Uh-huh.
And I was so happy. 2 months ago, I had her on the program and to talk to her about her creation of you know, and so it's so fantastic when you do that and you bring authors to you know, to new readers.
Well, I hope so. And there's so many readers that people are not aware of who were so much fun in the past. I have a weakness for funny mysteries, and I don't know if you have ever read the British author Pamela Branch. She wrote in the 1950s, and she only wrote 5 books, but one of them, Murder's Little Sister, is one of the funniest mysteries I think I've ever read. She has this wild, wacky, incredibly imaginative narrative, and I just love knowing about that, and I love being able to tell other people about it.
Well, I love the fact that, of course, you have done must have read so many books, you know, so many mysteries over your lifetime, and that you know them so well. And one of the ones that I know you mentioned, Wilkie Collins.
Oh, yes.
And it's so funny. I'm writing a book about Wilkie Collins, one of Wilkie Collins' best friends.
Really?
And so it's, you know, how sort of the threads of life are so strange, you know, and they weave such a marvelous tapestry that I'm reading your book, you're reading, you know, about, and I'm reading about, and I'm writing about something, and then it comes in. And again, Wilkie Collins is somebody most people have never heard about.
That's true.
And of course, he was one of the earliest mystery writers.
Right, one of the very first. So many great books, and you know, one of the one of the greatest mystery writers in American mystery was Mary Roberts Rinehart, and I'm pretty sure she's no longer published. And at one time, she was the highest paid author in America, and she had a very extraordinary life as well as being a wonderful mystery author. She was covered. The battlefield in World War I for the Saturday Evening Post, and she was the only woman ever to get to No Man's Land in France. So, you know, there are just so many interesting things out there, and fun to think about them.
And, of course, you wanted to be yourself. That's what, when you were a child, you wanted to be a reporter.
Oh, yes. I was convinced I was going to grow up and be the next Maggie Higgins, you know. I was had a trench coat and smoked Chesterfields, which I fortunately gave up many, many, many years ago. And then I met a young law student and married, and turned out I was better suited to write fiction, so...
Well, and it's funny with, you know, you're there in Oklahoma, and you have made, I bet South Carolina says, why don't we have that island? Maybe we should go build that island. Yeah, we need growers. Whoa, the tourists who would go.
Well, you know, at the time, I created the fictional island, and I was glad I did because I still love Hilton Head, but it now has 2 million visitors a year. I mean, you know, it is not the sleepy little island that I envisioned, that I knew many, many years ago.
Well, we have the sort of the remnants of a sleepy little town just north of where we have the studio, and it's so nice to go down one of those old streets and sort of that intimacy of a small town on the shores here. Of course, we're on the Gulf side. And
right.
But
it's very beautiful too.
Oh, it is. It is beautiful. And yeah, when you, I was thinking about how lucky we are. I mean, there are a lot of readers, I think, and we're lucky that I think there is a new generation coming up of readers, and I want to, you know, help encourage people to just read. It's just so much fun. It just opens your mind so much. And as I was talking about Ghost to the Rescue, which is the,
yes,
the Bailey Ruth one, and there, uh-huh, she comes to the aid to save a young writer.
Uh-huh, exactly.
And I think that's so wonderful because, of course, as you said, you wrote a lot of books that disappeared and
right,
and didn't make money, but you continued going and continued writing. And I know that you you know, encourage young writers and encourage all writers just to continue.
You don't have much choice. We cannot affect the market. You know, we can't do anything about what's happening in New York, but all we can do is write the very best books we can write and hope that there will be a way to bring them to readers. And of course, you know, publishing is being transformed now by the electronic world, and no one quite knows where it's going to go. And a great many authors now who feel excluded from the great big publishing houses are publishing, as they call them, indie books. And I don't know how that's going to work. I think it works for some writers, but I feel like it's just a brand new world out there. And write the book, and do your best with it, and then look around and try to make friends with other writers, because I think that's the most important thing, is to be part of the writing community. And I'll bet you all, because I was listening to the announcements, for the show, you have probably a pretty strong writing community in your area, and getting involved with other writers is a very helpful way to learn more about what you possibly can do with what you've written.
Well, we do. We have some great writing groups here, and I want to, again, I have to thank you. I have right here in my hand, I'm holding it up because we are also podcast, and people can see I have one of the boxes that you sent me of books, and I'm going to share that. I have next week I'm speaking to a writers group, and I have a couple other events coming up, and I'm going to share. It's hard. It's hard. I have a very big problem giving up a book. As a matter of fact, the funniest thing is, in January 2015. My New Year's resolution, which, of course, luckily, nobody ever keeps him. But anyway, resolution in 2015 was that I was going to winnow down my books. I have too many books. I've been schlepping them around the world, wherever I go, from Israel, from Iran, from England. I lived in England a long time, so, of course, I picked up quite a few, really great books there, and I'm carrying them to Texas and then over here to Florida, and I'm thinking, I've got to cut it down. I just have to. And then
I send you another box of books.
It's worse than that. In March, I started my program last March, and ever since then, I have been receiving just books after books after books, and my mailman is like going crazy. What is happening here? And but it's so fantastic. And I will share, and I want to tell people, I mean, you autographed all of these books, and they are just wonderful. And also the audiobooks. There are so many people who really, appreciate the audiobooks. And
right, they depend on them now because, so many people, either they have to commute, or they have vision problems. Who knows what the situation is. But the audiobooks make such a difference for so many people.
They do, and it's wonderful. And I'm going to share. It's hard for me to share books and give. My husband has to I'm saying, I go somewhere and I find this book. He says you can't take another. Well,
after, book.
But it's so funny. I have books that, and of course I know half the time I know exactly where I bought them, and so I had Eloise James on, and her and her mother had written a book, and it was published in like 40 years ago in Minnesota, and I had that book, so I had to go dig it out, so I have all these books, and I want to thank you, and I know what I'll do is I'll send you some photos when I give away the books.
Thank you very much.
I know everyone who gets one of your books, especially an autograph book, is going to be so thrilled. It's just so amazing. And when I talk to writers, and I tell them, that they just have to continue and keep trying. Uh-huh. And as I said, one of the nice things about this program, I get to talk to all sorts of bestsellers, such as you. I know you have millions and millions of books out there. And
over the course of the years, quite a few.
Oh, yeah, a lot. And but I also, the wonderful thing, the reason I named this Joy on Paper is there is such a joy to just getting the words down on paper and to see them. And of course you're like the epitome of joy. When you write, you can feel that you just enjoy writing, and that's fantastic.
Well, I think the great joy comes from having written. You're sitting out there, and my office is in a little room behind my house, and I'm concentrating, and I'm trying to do it, and I finish and for the day, and then I go back and reread it, and I think, oh, hey, I kind of like that. it makes it worth it.
Well, it does, and I know that, of course, you have a web page, and people can go to that. It's carolynhart.com, right?
That's correct.
It's just simple as that. I always tell people nowadays they have to, if they even have a little hint in their mind that they want to write, they have to go and register. Now you have to get your domain name quickly because they're disappearing.
Right.
So, you know, I know that I could spend another hour. And as a matter of fact, what I need to do is bring you back and you can talk for an hour just about your favorite books, because I think what I love about, you know, the internet now is that we can go back and get books that haven't been, you know, published recently, because what happens is a book comes out, people hear about it, they buy it, but then it's forgotten. But nowadays, you can go back, and like with your books, you can go on the internet and you can start.
You can get any of them.
And you can start from book one, which is really something that you could never have done, you know, with simple bookstores. I mean, they could never keep up, you know, the inventory.
And, it's remarkable. You know, and the neat thing about it is that all of these used booksellers, you know, are listed. I mean, they're somehow, the magic of the internet is beyond me. But you know, any book you want, you can find it. Mm-hmm. So it's great.
Now, of course, you mentioned that Max Darling was based on one of the Hardy Boys. And, of course, Hardy Boys was a series that meant a lot to you when you were young. And Nancy Drew?
Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys, oh, heavens, yes, I loved those books. And, you know, I still think it's just so much fun. I don't know if kids still read these kinds of books, you know, but it was just so wonderful because Frank and Joe Hardy and Nancy Drew were so independent, and they were so devoted to justice, and they were just an inspiration, you know, to us growing up.
Well, I know one of the things that I did with my boys is that we started, I had not lived in America for quite a few years, and I came back, and I didn't know when I had my boys that you weren't supposed to teach them to read, you know. I didn't know it was a sort of something you're supposed to put off, and so I just started reading to them when they were, of course, babies, and by the time they were 5 years old, they were reading the Hardy Boys. And
that's wonderful.
We made a particular effort because I wanted them to read the original Hardy Boys, not the modernized versions. Because
they're better.
It's fantastic because, you know, there is a difference when they modernize them. I think they lose something they change, you know, words and things. And so it was wonderful that at the age of five, they were already into the Hardy Boys. And you're right. It does teach a goodness, faith in that you can do right. You can do the right thing and get a good result. And I think, well, I was also, I had wanted to be a doctor, so I read Cherry Ames' books, too. I don't know.
Oh, I did, too. Oh, I love the Cherry Ames.
I love them, and I became one of those candy stripe girls. All my high school years, I was a candy striper because of her, of those books. And I do hope, there is a generation, I think, of readers coming up, the ones who were, thank goodness, to J.K. Rowling, who wrote Harry Potter. It proved that young kids can read very long books, you know, if they're interesting enough. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that they will continue reading and find, you know, I've had a fantastic success in finding some really great writers. New writers and encouraging young people to continue reading too. So,
well, I think that's wonderful. Well, you know, obviously you have so much fun with this, and you are just very kind to think of me, and I appreciate it.
Well, kind. It's just like I can't even think. I think, you know, just as I said, I could hardly sleep last night thinking about you, and I know I have Mike Resnick coming up in February.
Uh-huh.
And that's, I'm going terrific, to be talking to him. And it's so amazing. that I discovered that we both know a lot about Jimmy Hoffa, so I'm looking forward to talking to him. So,
oh my goodness.
Well, you know, it's again, it's one of those things where you have the threads that that take you to interesting places.
Exactly. So, that's what leads us all on.
So I'm hoping that perhaps we could do that. What we could do is set up another program where you come and just tell us. And because I want to open people's minds to new writer, to not new writers, you know, some
the
of the old writers,
they might
too.
Not
yeah,
be familiar
the,
with,
writers that
right.
they're not familiar with. And exactly to tell them, like, about the ones that are worth, you know, reading, taking that effort and getting out there and ordering the books and reading them. And so perhaps you'd do that for me. You'd come back?
Oh, sure. I would love to.
Oh, that I will look forward to it, and I will come back to you. And again, as I said, I will send you photos of the people who I give your books to. And I know that they will all appreciate it. And I want to thank you so much, Carolyn, for joining me today. And
thank you for, it's always fun to talk about mysteries.
Oh, it is. It is. It is. And as you said, they do serve a wonderful purpose, and you can travel the world with mysteries, and that's the fantastic thing about it.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, you take good care, and thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. That was amazing for me. A great honor to talk to Carolyn, and I am going to make sure that she comes back and shares a whole hour telling us about the different books that she recommends. And meanwhile, I want to again remind everyone about the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They are meeting this coming Saturday on January 9th at the Feathersound Panera's on 2285 Ulmerton Road. And that's in Clearwater, and it's going to be from 3 to 5. Join in the fun. If you have a script or you've started a script, or if you just have an idea for a script, come and join the group. And it will be a wonderful opportunity for you to meet the kind of people who are interested in the same thing and will help you move ahead. Now, I want to also remind you that I am now going to be on every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 o'clock, so make sure you join me. I have some wonderful guests coming up in the next few weeks, including I'm going to be devoting one entire hour to talking about marketing, how to market your book, and how to get out there and to really move it along. I've also got Sue Kochman coming up. That's Casey Kochman's mother, the baseball player Casey Kochman. His mother wrote a fantastic, well, she's written several fantastic children's books, and I'm looking forward to having her here in February to talk about her children's books. So do make sure you join me. And, of course, as always, I want to thank Big Ed in the control room, who always is there with a big smile on his face for me. And remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. So join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it and have an absolutely fantastic, great week. And read a book. Read a mystery. Bye-bye now.